It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning to you. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 16th of August, 2024. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. And so much coming up on the programme. I'll tell you much more about that later. But we've got That's Entertainment and also €2,500 in cash to give away. But first, we are going to welcome onto the show our Friday panel, where we'll run through some of the big stories of the day and the week and get their views and get your views as well. I'll give you an early invite, by the way, to have your say by WhatsApp or texting 086 60 25000, or give us a call, or giving us a call on 07491 25000, and emails are very welcome too. And that is to this address, comments@highlandradio.com. All right, we'll say good morning first to our first guest, Mary Hart, journalist and broadcaster. Mary, good morning to you. Mary Hart, are you there? You're muted, unfortunately.
Yes, I'm here. Good morning.
Stuff, an early heart attack. Thanks so much indeed. Seamus McDade, Managing Director of Football Special. Good morning, Seamus.
Morning, Greg. How are you doing?
Good, good. Good to have you on board. And Dr. Joe Kelly, author and teacher. Dr. Joe, how are you getting on?
Good morning to you all.
Good stuff. I'll stay with you, Dr. Joe. This week, more talk of an increase to the minimum wage. And the small and medium-sized business organisation, that's ISME, has said there would be no justification for a further increase in the national minimum wage of €1 in the budget. It follows a report that the Low Pay Commission has recommended increasing the basic pay rate to at least €13.70 next year. Now, traditionally, the government never refuses a recommendation from the Low Pay Commission, so that's an important context. But ISME said this would represent an 8% increase on the current rate of €12.70 and come on top of a 12.4% increase in January of this year. So, Joe, what do you think? Is this the right thing for the government to do? Do you sympathise with small businesses and the pressures they're under?
Well, again, you're caught between two stools. I think small businesses are being finding very, very difficult. And I know the government, for example, has made about $200 million available to about 80,000 small businesses. But it's more about the government dividing people and having us fight among ourselves. Yes, it is an 8% increase, but in relative terms, there's 164,000 people on the lower wage, and even students, some students are even on less of a wage, 889 if you're 18 years of age or below. So the point is, can people survive on that wage to meet the basic necessities of life? Absolutely not. They can't afford transport, food, medical, different aspects of life on that kind of wage. But at the same time, can businesses sustain the increase? It's the second highest minimum wage in the EU after Belgium. And so one has to think of it in that context. However, by 2026, the government have committed themselves not to a minimum wage, but a living wage, which would be, I think it's 60% of the average wages of Ireland. So if €1 is a big step this year, technically next year would be 2025, going into the budget 2026, it's going to even increase a lot more. And so the question is, how is the government using the money, the taxes? And so when people think of the government, and the government are giving money for this and for that, it's our taxes that they are using. The government doesn't have money. The government has your money and my money. And when you see, for example, an increase of $2.1 billion to $7.3 billion, that's $7,300 million. That's an increase of almost $5,000 million on the equality and diversity budget alone. So the question has to be asked is, how is the government using the vast amount of taxpayers' money that they have at the present? And then if we would look at that, we could see that wage increases would be possible, and also that small businesses would be sustained in a better taxation system. So I think the problem is not increasing the wage. The problem is not harnessing more cost onto businesses, but that the government themselves would look at how they're taxing. And they're not going to do this, because at the end of the day, the ordinary citizen, the ordinary taxpayer, is going to pay for this one way or the other.
But already at the moment, we're seeing, and you know, at a shocking rate, a lot of restaurants in particular, but bars and what have you, closing left, right and centre. They're just going out of business. They can't stay in business. So that's at this point. So an extra euro per hour per member of staff, that's going to pull in a whole group of other businesses that were just keeping the head above water.
You've made the point, and very well. Pascal Dunning recently said, well, we cannot have this 9% tax for, you know, the hospitality. Yeah, VAT rate, because, well, I call it tax, but people get confused the word VAT. VAT means tax at the end of the day, and tax means you and I pay. So you can call it VAT, which is the value added tax, which is the correct meaning, but I call it tax, and let's not be fooled anymore by the government. So the government are not willing to spend or to reduce the tax rate in the hospitality sector by 9% to 9%, because Pascal Donohue said, we can't afford 700 million. This is what it would cost the state, 700 million. Think of the jobs. Think of the benefit it would bring to the different hospitality sectors. Mm. Yet we can increase the diversity and equality budget by over 5,000 million.
But it's quite interesting you mentioned earlier on about us fighting amongst each other, because really the public, if they when they see that VAT rate being campaigned for, they don't really say, OK, this is good. This will reduce the cost of business. This means the more sustainable. This means they'll be able to pay people better wages and what have you. What they say is, oh, why would you give that to hotels and restaurants? Sure, it's not passed on to the customer anyway. That just goes into the business person's back pocket. So do you know what I mean? Like, often the public do the work of the government. I think sometimes in campaigning against measures that might benefit business and employment.
Well, again, if you think on it, it's your children, my brothers and sisters, my family that are working in many of these hospitality industries, and it's to our own benefit. And again, it's just back to the word of taxation. People need to realise that when you hear the word valued added tax or any other USC, it's your money. Mm. And I genuinely believe that this is a splitting the people, causing more division, when in fact we should really look at how our government is squandering. And I mean squandering
our
money.
Well, OK, before I bring our next guests in, what you're looking for is something completely different. We're not getting that. What we're getting is the conversation as to whether or not the government should increase the minimum wage by a euro plus. Do you believe they should or should not?
Well, my suggestion is that...
But that's not the question.
They should, yes, increase it, providing that they look at tax bans.
But you've already said that's not on the table. So,
well, it should be.
Under the current tax regime, do you believe the government should increase the minimum wage?
Well, again, I wouldn't make that decision. I wouldn't allow them to increase it. And at the same time, I would demand that taxation would be altered so that people, 164,000 people that can't meet the... And we're going to talk maybe later about food banks.
We'll go straight into that, I think, because these are the people we're talking of. Mary Hart, good morning to you again, journalist and broadcaster. What's your view?
Good morning, Greg. Well, I think we're talking about two different issues here, whether small business can survive or whether people get a decent wage, and we've got to concentrate on the decent wage. The minimum wage should not be the target. The minimum wage is the minimum you can pay a person. It should be increased when it's necessary to be increased. And, you know, I agree with Joe. You know, we're looking at people who cannot afford to pay rent, or can sometimes not even afford to, you know, take public transport, cannot afford anything that's normally well-paid or reasonably well-paid employees are. Everyone deserves a decent wage, and if small companies have paid their workers a decent wage, they will get in return good workers, and they will then in turn survive better. I don't think that you can equate the two, that the demise of a small business is due to the fact that you've increased the wage level of a minimum.
Well, that's what Ismi is saying. I mean, one of the biggest costs, one of the biggest overhead costs for a business is going to be the pay packet, and with respect, you know, I see lots of people, you know, on around €12 an hour in retail or in restaurants, and they're running around like blue ass flies, you know, giving everything they possibly can for that. But it's the businesses, Mary, that are saying that, you know, we cannot absorb another built-in cost, you know, an everyday cost to business.
Well, a minimum wage should not be considered the built-in cost that you cannot afford. You know, these are employees, they're keeping your business going. They should be properly paid, decently paid. Not, as I say again, the minimum wage should not be the target of what you pay. Mm. Somebody should actually be paying them, you know, a decent wage, which is what is considered to be that they are happy going home having been paid. And if a business can't survive paying its workforce, then it either cuts down its workforce or it doesn't survive at all. You know, I, and I'm a, you know, You shouldn't actually be, you can run any kind of a business when you don't pay people. So if you have to pay people, then you should adjust your business. And, you know, that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. I would certainly see that a minimum wage, as I say, is what the EU recommended. We never had it until the EU set it up.
I think particularly in the hospitality industry, though, maybe there was a little bit of gouging, but there is a point that you can put your lunches up to. Or you can put your main courses up to, or your starters up to, that people actually won't go in any longer. You know what I mean? So if you do pay your staff a proper wage, you do have to sort of take those, you know, have to take extra revenue in somewhere. But there comes a point whereby, and there's places I used to eat, I can no longer afford to eat because the prices have gone to that point that I'm not prepared to pay.
Well, who benefits here? You know, you're going to have to ask yourself the question.
Yeah.
You know, who is actually benefiting from not paying people a decent wage for the work that they put in?
Let's bring in Seamus McDade. Seamus, what do you think?
Yeah, I just think that it's another increase on cost of business that small and medium enterprises in this country are going to find very difficult to carry. I mean, I think that Dr. Joe spoke really eloquently there about the large tax base that is available in the country and the ability, the resources that the country has to look after people who are on the poverty line. But the one solution that the government is choosing is just to put a cost back on a business.
But what about, and I think Mary can cut across me if I'm misquoting her, you should have a business that the business model is such that it should be able to sustain paying people a fair wage. I haven't misquoted you there, Mary, have I?
No. Right. Well, there's two scenarios there, really, Greg, right? And the best case scenario is we're all paying €10 for a pint and €7 for a coffee. So if Mary is happy with that and we'll be paying €300 a night in the hotel room and it'll be about €85 a head to go to a restaurant. So if we're happy with that, and that's the cost that the society wants, and that will rise inflation, which is great. Now, Mary, that's what you have suggested, that we should all be able to carry that cost. So then you must be happy enough then to spend this sort of
that
level on hospitality.
Somebody has to make a profit, and the business has to make the profit.
Okay, well, so if the business can't, if businesses are closing at the minute in hospitality, which is predominantly hospitality that are closing in, it's because of the minimum wage has gone from $10.50 2 years ago to now they want to go next year to 13, just a 23% increase that the hospitality business is missing.
You live on 10.50?
It was 10.50 in January 2020.
Now, the Khmer is asking, could you live on 10.50 Europe?
You live on
10.50. No, but nobody, we didn't, it's not to say that price, that there shouldn't have been risen off that price. It's to say that consecutive rises, on top of all the other things that have come on, the increased VAT, the DRS scheme that came in.
Yeah, well, that's where the argument
should
be.
There are all sorts of costs of hospitality. There are loads of costs that the businesses are trying to absorb here.
But Mary, just in relation to like, is it fair, right, that, I mean, obviously we're coming into an election and the government can put a fiver on the pension, a tenner on the pension, increase social welfare payments, and they'll get the rise from that. But one of the key elements of the budget will be to say, and also we're going to increase the minimum wage as we head towards a living wage, and it's not going to actually cost them anything. They're actually making this announcement and we'll get the you know, the positive vibe from that, but it's actually a cost that they're putting onto business. And they've already this year extended, you know, sick leave and parental leave and lots of other measures. I mean, business people might say, well, these are fantastic announcements that you're making, and we're on board with them because our children are probably in the same boat. But why do you keep asking us to dip into our narrowing profits to meet these new measures, Mary?
Well, because we have a social economy, we have a government that is looking at trying to improve people's daily lives. I certainly think, and I agree, we're the second, if we're to believe the statistics of the Europe, that we are the second wealthiest per capita of spending power in Europe. Therefore, there is plenty of money available within the government coffers, and we know that. But to take the argument that we shouldn't give people a decent wage is wrong. I believe that everybody is entitled to a decent wage. If businesses are struggling, then the battle should be from businesses to say, well, right, we cut our VAT rates, or you give us some incentives to stay in business. If you cannot afford to stay in business, then the business model is not working. And that's my view. And it shouldn't be hitting the lowest person on the run of trying to make a decent life for themselves. Mm. And, you know, the minimum wage, as I keep repeating, is not the target. The minimum wage is just saying you can't go below that. Therefore, it is not anything decent to go below that.
All right, just in relation to that then, I mean, many farms, probably the majority of farms, aren't sustainable as businesses, but they are supported by government to keep people in employment and what have you. Would you be in favour of the farm subsidies? Do you think that's a good idea, Mary? Or are you of the view also that, you know, if your business is not sustainable without considerable inputs from the state, well, then it should be allowed to fail and you go into a different sort of industry?
Oh, businesses shouldn't be allowed to fail, but businesses are, you know, you've got to look at, you know, where your profit margins are, and giving people a very low wage is not why you should be in business. You should be in business because what you are selling has a profit margin that keeps you in business.
Seamus, do you want to come back at that?
I just think that there's a lack of, that Mary is living in a utopia with a lack of commercial reality there. And don't forget, the minimum wage is not going to affect Costa Coffee. It's not going to affect Dunn Stores. We're talking about small local businesses where this is really going to affect. And it's not that this is the one thing that we've had to absorb over the years. It's the continued increase. And as has been pointed out, business has been asked to carry everything. And there are loads of money available in the country to look after people who are on the poverty line. This is the one stick that the government continues to choose. If the government said, we're going to raise income tax so that supports can be given to people who are on the poverty line, that is a conversation that lots of business owners would say, yes, that's fine, let's do that. I'm not on here advocating that people should have to live in poverty. Certainly not that people who are working should have to live in poverty. It's that if we go down a continued route that businesses have to carry the cost, there will be closures. And let's not forget that there are very, 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 very many business owners in this country who are living below the minimum wage. Because what Mary fails to realise is that if I have to pay a certain level to my employees, there's less money available for me. And lots of us are living on less than the minimum wage so that we can continue to cause employment. So we can obviously continue to raise the minimum wage, but instead of Football Special having 5 employees, we'll just have 0 employees because there'll be no business here. So then that will have an increase.
I don't think anybody's going to believe that a company such as yours is going to fail because you can't pay people another euro a week more.
I think that there's lots of businesses out there that are very close to being on the edge. And we've just come through Brexit, the pandemic, huge increases in energy costs. And all of these things are trying to be absorbed by us and continue to operate. And we're being,
are you telling me that Ireland's in a bad place with shops, that the shops are all closing, that hotels are all closing? You know, that this country is not a very wealthy.
I think, Mary, just in relation to the hotels, I think if the government hadn't employed the model it did to house refugees, I think there actually probably would be much more hotels closed than there are. But there are restaurants and businesses closing all over the place every day. On Facebook, there's another business pulling down its shutters, Mary.
Maybe there were too many in the first place.
Okay. Joe, do you want to come back in there?
Again, I have to agree with Seamus completely. And this is about how the government's deciding to spend our money. And, you know, it reminds me of the phrase, live horse and you'll get food. Live business and, you know, you might get a break. Live person, work on the employee and you might get a break. And it's like the man in my town, once he taught a horse to live without food, and just as he had him taught, he died. And I think this is government policy. If you just take, for example, basic electricity prices, this is the context we need to understand this, both for the employee and employer. Electricity has doubled its price. So when you're paying 21% tax, as we all do, on our electricity, if the price has doubled, in real terms, you're paying 42% tax on the original amount. So these costs, individuals, employees are absorbing as we speak today in Highland Radio listening to you, as well as businesses. Who's taking that tax? The government. What are they doing with that tax? Is it benefiting the employer? No. Is it benefiting the employee? No. It's making certain people a lot wealthier, and it's causing then a row between, you know, fighting. This is what they do, divide the employer and the employee.
This has got to do with the minimum wage. This is a different
has everything to do with the minimum wage. A business should be given a proper environment in which to flourish, and our government is not creating that. Also, an employer should be given a proper environment in which to make a living wage.
Okay, so just to wrap this up before we move on, Mary Hart, in a nutshell, are you saying effectively, and many people might agree with you, that if your business model is such that you can't absorb an extra euro per hour for your staff, well, then you're not running your business effectively, and that perhaps maybe the market's overcrowded, needs consolidating,
your business, people are entitled to a decent wage, and therefore, if you're employing someone to work in your business, then you are obliged to pay them a decent wage. If you cannot afford to pay them a decent wage to do the job, then you're going to have to look at what you can pay or how many people you can employ. But certainly the issue is paying a decent wage. The issue isn't whether companies survive or don't survive. I believe that people are entitled to a decent wage. In this economy, it's an expensive country to live in. We have plenty of money in the coffers, but that has nothing got to do yet with people being paid a decent wage.
Okay, stay where you are. Might dip in back and forth from this one, of course, because we're going to go on to the cost of living next, following concerns expressed on this programme by the Donegal Food Response Network. Okay, really appreciate the input so far from Mary Hart, Seamus McDade and Dr. Joe Kelly. Much more from them and your comments as they come in after we take this break. We'll be back in about 4 minutes. So we heard this week from the Donegal Food Response Network. It's issued an urgent back-to-school appeal. The group, in conjunction with DLDC, is asking for food donations, school supplies, vouchers and cash for local families. Approximately 640 families across Donegal are currently supported by the 21 organisations involved in the Donegal Food Response Network. In Letterkenny, we see queues of people waiting their turn just to get the basics to live. We see working families, double income families, needing the support of some of these service providers in some of the more deprived areas of County Donegal. Dr. Joe, I'll start with you on this one, if that's all right. I mean, it's very difficult, and when we talk about the wealth of the country and the wealth of the available wealth that we have, and tax income and all of that kind of stuff, 640 families, and those are the 640 that have, you know, maybe in some cases feel they've had to swallow their pride to go and seek help. It's very troubling. That's a lot of people, especially when you add in dependents and what have you, that are literally unable to clothe and feed their children.
I have to put on my old history head. It's 177 years since the famine. And are we still having to feed the children of this country? Look, it's an issue. Poverty is always an issue. And our government have done good things, let it not be said otherwise. We are one of the most wealth-distributive countries in the world. We're in the top 10 easily, taking wealth through taxation from the wealthier and redistributing it. There's no doubt about that. Poverty is always going to be with us in one way or another for various reasons. It's very complicated. But feeding a child isn't complicated. And when you hear 21 organisations in Donegal under Donegal Food Response, and it was hard listening to Roisin Ní Gealaithe and Margaret Larkin yesterday on your show. And I'm a teacher, and I see children every day in front of me. And to think that some of them are hungry, and there's not food there. And it's got to do with dignity. It's got to do with self-achievement. If we rob our children of a chance to start in life and they have to worry about food and the basics that we take for granted, then we've really, really hampered them in the future progress of their lives. And I would like to hear a lot more about this, Greg, because if it is really a problem, it's a problem we can do something about. And people need to know, be it neighbours, be it charities, people need to know that we're there for them. And, you know, a man used to always say, I cry because I had no shoes until I saw a man that had no feet. And at times we might think things are bad in our own households and we're struggling with bills and with one thing and another. But to think that there are others out there in our own county today, it's just heart-rending. It's something very, very emotional. And as I say, as a teacher, it's something that horrified me when I heard that yesterday. something makes me more is, I don't know if you've been aware, people can log on to the Pubble website. And it's one good thing that Rodrigo Gorman, the Minister for Family, has done. It's an interactive map of deprivation, and you can click on to the various townlands and you see the national averages and how below certain areas are and how deprived children are within each of our communities. And Donegal, unfortunately, as always, is very high.
But it's great that we've got this portal that we can check that out. But surely then that means that we have the data to suggest the areas that we need to be going into. And as spokespeople said yesterday as well from the Donegal Food Response Network, in some cases there are other issues as well. There are other services from within the state, maybe it's addiction or what have you, that they've identified, but there's no help for these families. So we have families who are, maybe they're struggling with addiction, or maybe this is a domestic abuse issue. There's no money, there's no funds. There could be a gambling addiction. Who is to say what it might be? But we've got these 640 families, just the families that have come forward, that are in such dire straits that they're going in for pasta and pasta sauce and bread and you know, shoes and trousers and skirts and jumpers.
Well, nationally, they reckon, the estimate, Early Childhood Ireland estimate about 257,000 children are in that category, that they can't afford, you know, homes that can't afford the heat in their houses, or that a child wouldn't have two pairs of actual good fitting shoes. To think that that's the Ireland we're in, and maybe something else, and I know I have to be PC when I say single parent homes, but in real terms, 41% of single parent homes, and in most cases that's mothers, and this is the word they wanted out of our constitution not so long ago in a referendum, 41% of single homes, and that's mostly females, are suffering from this deprivation.
Yeah, okay, I get you, but there's still going to be reference to mothers in the constitution.
But I'm just making the
point.
Yeah,
I know that, but it's just
that the word is very important in the sense that it's women, it's particularly single women that are with their children that are suffering most statistically in this food deprivation.
Yeah, obviously, because sometimes men thought the grass was greener on the other side, or as soon as they found out their partner was expecting, did a runner. So there's a significant role.
And they're the voiceless.
A significant role of men in that issue as well. Mary Hart, it is hard to hear, isn't it? You know, so many families struggling so desperately in this country.
It is, yeah. And, you know, as a board member of DLDC, I do admire what Margaret Larkin and her team have been doing, and all of those organisations that are voluntary, that are helping with the food banks and the trying to assist those who are struggling to make ends meet. I think that we have to just look at it. It's very difficult, but you just have to look at it in a very logical way as to why are people not able to manage to put food on the table. And as you've alluded to, Greg, there are underlying issues: gambling, alcohol abuse, debt collection. People get themselves into difficult situations for all sorts of reasons. And I think we really need to address those issues, because you are not going to make people, you can't perpetuate having food banks and helping people without looking at the underlying issues as to why they are struggling. We can go back to people not being paid enough, but have we to ask the question, what is the profile of those people who are suffering? And Joe has mentioned, you know, single parents are probably the highest on that demographic. But also, you know, are they within, you know, a working class environment where people just don't bother about them, where they're in housing estates, where they're getaways.
Can I just come in a little bit? Just reason, I just want to, just in case this is attributed to me, I never heard anything that suggests that the majority of these families, there's co-issues here, i.e., you know, addiction or what have you, but that is present in some of the cases. But if you're on the minimum wage, right, say you're a single parent and you're on the minimum wage, half of your wage would go on rent now. So what, you bring about 25, 26 grand in, it's quite possible you're paying €1,000 in rent. And also then, if you are out working, you happen to have a car on the road, which is another 1,000 just on tax and insurance, if you're lucky. That doesn't include diesel, petrol, putting tyres on. Then you might have to pay someone to look after the child, which could be, if you're very lucky, 200, 250 quid a week or what have you. So, like, it's very easy to see how two parents, if it's a couple together, taking in 50 grand, both trying to work with childcare costs and rent, that very quickly that money runs out. You know, there certainly is other issues going on in some cases, but I would say for the majority, they're just you know what I mean, just a regular couple, and the numbers don't add up.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that's the reason, that is the primary reason why people cannot make ends meet. There are, as I said, you need to apply the logic of why this is happening, and look at it into as to where do you actually start to try and alleviate this issue. I mean, we are a wealthy country, and again, I go back to, you know, people should be paid a decent wage, because if we are a wealthy country, it's because we're bringing in taxes. And if we're bringing in taxes, it means the companies are making a lot of profit to bring in the taxes from the money that they're actually making. So we are actually getting, we have a lot of money to dispense into the economy.
Yeah, but how is that trickling down, Mary? Because obviously we've got very big companies, you know, massive international companies, American companies that are in here. They're paying people a good wage. Those people are able to save. We've got billions upon billions of euro on deposit accounts in this country, and that's that. But then there is the small and medium businesses that are just employing four or five people, just keeping their head above water. And often in these areas that we're talking of, we're very reliant on tourism, for example, here. It's these families that are working for those smaller companies. So the gap, there's a massive gap between the well-off and the poor, and that gap is widening. And there's a massive gap between businesses that are well-supported. They've got very, very favourable sort of tax regimes that keep them in business. And then there are others that are at the pin of their collar trying to absorb all of the overhead costs. And they're often the ones that are employing the people that we're talking about. And if those businesses go, then the people we're talking about end up on social welfare. So surely we should be targeting, and I think Joe really, well, this is what he was talking about, closing that gap, because there is the very well-off in this country and there is the very, very poor, and that gap is statistically widening.
There's always going to be the very well-off and there's always going to be the other end of the spectrum. That's just trying to bring equality into an economy like ours is just not going to happen, but it should not be so wide as it is at the moment. And I do believe that, you just have to stop and think. We do have full employment. The people who are out of work at the moment are people who are always going to be out of work for sickness or for whatever reasons. So for that reason, you know, we do have a buoyant economy. What we don't have is the proper wage sector to help those. And we are, you know, I absolutely accept that it's the middle income brackets that are being hit by everything coming their way. And again, you know, it's adjusting the tax that people have to pay. The cost of living is high in this country. So that's, and for that, right back to the minimum wage, you do need to be getting properly paid to be able to match.
All right. I'm very much looking forward to what Seamus has to say. The government's about to announce in the budget, you know, this giveaway budget, universal payments. So instead of just getting the electricity companies to reduce their profits and bring their costs down, what we're actually going to do is take taxpayers' money and pay them the going rate. And not only that, it's going to be universal. So those who are very, very well off are going to get their electricity credits. And those that are very, very poor are going to get the same amount. You know, so even in terms of putting more pressure on reducing utility costs, but also targeting payments rather than the lazy universal way, let's get the money to those families in those deprived areas. Let's use Joe Kelly's map. And get the money to the people that need it. We can't just say, well, it is what it is and you can't close the gap, because I've just given you one example that would actually, in a meaningful way, quite significantly close the gap.
Yeah, but how do you close the gap when, you know, if you insist that companies need to get, that the small companies can't afford to pay people the amount of minimum wage, as they say, as the government says, that's the minimum, you should be paying them much more than that. If companies are you know, if we have big profits in our coffers, then we're getting the tax back from, you know, from big companies. I actually see that the issues are, you know, looking into, as I said, in Strabane, for instance, you're getting half the amount of money on unemployment benefits as you would be getting in the Republic. So, you know, there are people are getting money. It's not that we're impoverished and people are standing on the side of the road begging. That's not the case. But the case is, you know, trying to find a level at which people's daily output from their wages matches what they're getting.
Yeah, I know, but we need to find solutions. And to be honest with you as well, I mean, whilst this deprivation and poverty and hardship of the families in Donegal is not visible because they're not standing on the street begging, it doesn't mean that it's not there, and it is there because we've the statistics to prove that it is. I'm not saying you're saying it's not there, but just because we can't see it, it doesn't mean that it's not happening, and happening in great numbers. Seamus McDade, Managing Director of Football Special.
Yeah, well, Greg, I mean, it's difficult to sort of argue on this side of the fence here now, because it sounds like my argument against the increasing minimum wage is that I hope more people go to food banks, but that's not what I'm trying to say. But I think there's two issues. Mary's making it sound that all business owners are Elon Musk or Michael O'Leary. That's not necessarily true. But on the other side, let's not forget that even a minimum wage worker, at least 25% of their wage is going straight to the government in taxes. They go to the shop to do their shopping. They're going to be 23%. They're going to be paid in VAT. They go to get their electricity or home heating oil. That's all going to be taxed. They go fill up their car. There's increases in excise duty. So there's lots of other costs that the government are adding on to people's lives as well. Now, if you say, let's give the working poor more money, we could just decrease income tax. Then they would have more money. We could just increase VAT, then their groceries would be cheaper.
Yeah, but that's also that's a universal action, isn't it?
Okay, so then we just change the brands then. So similarly, what the SMEs might say is, yes, if you're Facebook, you can afford to pay people a lot more than minimum wage. So why is it the same minimum wage across the country? Why is every company, regardless of whether you've got one employee or you've got 1,000, why are we all paying the same? Why are we all paying the same rate of tax? Why is the tax bands in this country just two rates? So it's from what I don't even sure what the two bands are. Why do we not have multiple bands that people who are on different wages are paying?
Well, I think Leo Varadkar tried that, didn't he? He wanted a 30% VAT, and that was very strongly not VAT tax. That was very strongly resisted and abandoned. So it seems anytime you do try and fiddle with the bands, it's shot down.
But you could put the band up. You could say that that nobody in this country pays any income tax less for the first 40,000. You know, you could raise that band way up and tell that people who are on lower wages that they're able to keep more of that money in their own pockets. The country is wealthy and well off. There's plenty of money around. It is heartbreaking that their families don't have food.
I think the government is very worried, because if an apple pulls out of the state, we are banjaxed. I think this is why it's very much in the government's interest to support small and medium businesses. Do you remember when Udaras used to chuck money at companies? They'd go into West Donegal, employ people, the money ran out, and away they went. And we thought, right, we need to support small and medium-sized enterprises in the locality, because they're going to be there into the future. Now all our eggs are in the data farms and the big companies. But if they pull out, who's the government going to go looking at to try and keep the economy in any way functioning? And that's going to be back to these small and medium-sized firms that are being, they feel, overheaded out of it.
That's 100% correct, Greg. I mean, you know, we are totally dependent now on the tax revenue of a couple of big companies. And like we said, we remember big companies. We remember lots of big companies pulling out of Donegal, Intel pulling out of Limerick. All of these things, these huge companies make a huge impact. And they are being treated the same way as we're being treated.
And if anyone has any doubts, how worried the government is,
the wealthy country that we are today, and they actually, the companies like Fruit of the Loom that left, they were getting the benefits of tax-free for the first number of years. And then they left after 10 years because they had got their benefits and they had no intention of staying after that. Google, Facebook, all of those companies are here for different reasons. They're not here. Obviously, we do give them a good tax, corporate tax rate, but they're here because they have a good, highly skilled workforce, English speaking, and they can get right across Europe. That is why they're here.
That's not true, Mary. That again is you are just taking the government's line there, hook, line, and sinker. Like,
no,
that's
I'm
100%. The only reason they're here.
You're
saying there's only skilled English speakers in Ireland. That's the only reason. There's no skilled English speakers in the rest of the world.
There are not the qualified employees that can work on the Facebooks and the Google and all of those companies, because as happened with Fruit of the Loom, they've gone to what we titled, which was wrongly so, third world countries. They went to Morocco, where they could pay them pittance to do what they were doing, and they didn't have to pay. They couldn't pay the pittance in Ireland, but they were getting their tax back. But that's not the case now with Google and Facebook and all of those. And they're not going to go into Britain because they're not part of the EU anymore. They're not going to go into France because they're not actually native speaking. And the Europe, big companies in America are going into Ireland. They love Ireland for those very reasons. They have a highly educated workforce, and the government have always put their, I'm not saying all the eggs into one basket, but you look at how well Ireland has moved along in attracting that type of industry into Ireland. Well-paid jobs, not the lowly paid jobs where you're making shirts all day and not getting much for it.
All right, Joe, you wanted to come back in there just before the break?
Yeah, just quickly, they reckon that 27% of our tax take in this country comes from the top three, Pfizer, Google and Apple. And as Seamus pointed out, when Dell left Limerick, it made a massive hole. And the government are getting worried at the moment, should one of those go, and particularly with politics going on in America at the moment, you know, making America great, trying to bring the tax and the companies back to America. But the thing is here is you don't make the poor wealthy by making the wealthy poor. And it's a question of how we distribute the money. And in fairness to the government, they spent $4.5 billion last year trying to address child poverty. There is money going in.
Where did that money go?
It went into different things. School meals, JESH programs, various different things. And they are working at trying to do this. Now, the question is, for example, the book scheme. I think personally I'm not for it. And it's not to say that people shouldn't, you know, the free book scheme, that should be more targeted. So now that books are free, you know, who's going to benefit out of this? Is it the students? Is it the families? I don't think so. It's going to be the book companies. I'm just bringing it back to my own life experience in the school place. That money could be harnessed better if targeted individuals who required books and the surplus money used in other ways. But this is back to your universal electricity and everything else. It's an attempt, all right, but it's focused the wrong way, and there's money being divided in ways that could be better spent. And right, the point maybe that's most important to say about all this, at the end of the day, we're dealing with young children, real human beings, and it brings back to us all how important community and family is. Okay. And I think it's terribly
important. This is not anything to do with any particular government or anything. I am completely apolitical, whether believe it or not. But I find it hard that we are putting money in a rainy day fund when we have so many young kids and families that are deprived, that are living in such a state, and they must be saying, it's piddling down here, can you please help us? But then again, as you say, there's so much of that money we can't do long-term spending on because it could go at any stage, the corporation tax. Okay, back with more after these. Right, we don't really have time to move on to another subject, but I was just curious, Mary, if... do you think there would be any value in, and I'm not sure if it happens in any of the other country, sort of a government having an element of the funding, you know, like councillors, they have some discretion over a small part of the budget, whereby there's some level of public consultation as to what we want in terms of, you know, universal measures or where we want money to be targeted, you know, right across all the various, you know, income levels, and sort of say, you know, would you be happy if we actually take this money and target it those that might need it most? Or maybe I'm living in La La Land.
No, I mean, we certainly, nobody has the answer to getting the economy perfect. And there's always going to be a pull and push because of, you look at, do you have an economy that dedicates itself to making profits and having, you know, the wealthy looked after better than the poor. So we're trying to bridge that gap always. Yeah, I do think it would be a good idea to have. But again, this country's full of advisory groups and bodies and companies or government agencies that are advising the government. It's a bit like the laws that we have, and nobody then to implement them or to make sure that they're abided by. So I'm not sure that it would give you anything. People voting is what decides generally how people
manage. See, that's the problem, and then you try and introduce measures that would maybe garner the most votes. I just think those advisories, those peoples and organisations, I think they're very Dublin-centric and urban-focused. And you know, we've seen that in other countries where they try and decentralise the media or decision-making because it can become, whether you want it or not, very Dublin-bubbly. Seamus, do you think the public should maybe have more input into, you know, where this money goes? Like, questions about, you know, effectively rewarding the electricity companies for their high prices with a universal sort of, you know, credit for electricity.
Well, I think one easy way to do that would be to just, as you said, to decentralize the budget. So it should, like, we should have a decentralized style of government so that all these decisions are not just based in Dublin and all government money doesn't just go into Dublin-centric capital projects, which is where all this money is going, or to pay advisors that are based into Dublin. So if Donegal County Council had a much, much larger budget and had much more role of what they could spend, then they would be much more in touch with what's happening on the ground here, and they would be able to spend the money better. So
right.
I think certainly taking the money away from one central pot and the Department of Finance based in the city centre of Dublin would be a huge help to stopping inequality.
All right, Dr. Joe, 20 seconds to you. I'm sorry to speak to you all the time.
A wee bit concerned, you know, we have about 30,000 NGOs in this country employing about 200,000 people, costing €6,400 of our taxes every year. And I would love to know what those NGOs are doing for that 6,400 million.
Well, some of those NGOs are organisations like Donegal Down Syndrome and you know what I mean? Absolutely. NGOs kind of become a dirty word, but some of them do incredible work.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. But I think we could have another layer of that if you're saying, you know, for redistributing money.
You.
I would be very, very concerned just spending money for the sake of
all
it
right.
and these reports sitting on shelves.
Dr. Joe Kelly, thank you so much for your part in what's been a really interesting conversation. I really appreciate it. And the same to you, Seamus McDade, Managing Director of Football Special. Have a lovely weekend. And lastly to Mary Hart, journalist and broadcaster, thank you so much for your time today. I greatly appreciate it. And have a wonderful weekend. Okay. We will be back with much more after the break, including loads of your comments, and they have been coming in thick and fast. That's all coming up after we take a break for the news and obituary notices.